All right, gentlemen, you have all been here for 8 weeks now, and you have done very, very well in your treatments.
Oh, good, thank you.
Except you, Scott, but you are a work in progress. Now, Keith, how are you feeling?
Relaxed, comfortable. Yeah.
Adam, the same question. How are you feeling?
Yeah, relaxed and happy.
Okay, Scott.
Is it time?
Okay, Scott, don't worry. Okay, I'll ask you one more question. Keith, you're all three gentlemen. You like the television shows?
Yes.
What will you be watching when you get home?
Something calm and relaxing, probably. Something smooth, Antiques Roadshow, something
Antiques
like
Roadshow.
That.
Excellent. Adam, you like the animated series? Oh, I understand. Yes. Is there one in particular you would like to watch?
Maybe a bit of Scooby.
No, calm, calm, calm.
It's another word went with
no,
do.
No, gentlemen, it didn't. Think of Antiques Roadshow. Think of Antiques Roadshow. No, gentlemen. Scott.
It's time.
No, please, not again, gentlemen. Welcome, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Asterman.
And I, yes, I am...
dressed rather like the man from Del Monte again.
It's hot.
It is.
It's very hot out there.
It is, dear.
So I'm going all white.
Well, it's creamy, really.
Cream, yeah, linen.
And so, with weird animated earworms aside... it is time for the news with El Presidente.
Woohoo!
This is the BBC! Do not listen to the others! They are false prophets!
Doctor Who news!
Yay!
Doctor Who gets animated for preschoolers.
Ooh. Okay.
It's Doctor Who, but probably not the Doctor Who you're expecting. With the fate of the main Doctor Who series currently still up in the air, it has surprised many that BBC is looking for a production company to create an animated version aimed at children of 4 to 6 years old for their CBeebies channel.
I'm probably going to get a lot to watch that quite a bit with the kids.
Oh, yeah. This would be a strict outsourcing arrangement, with the BBC finding all of the money and retaining all rights to what is produced. Neither Bad Wolf Productions nor Disney are involved. Less able to pitch their services like anyone else, anyway. Assuming this goes to plan, then we can expect to see 52 episodes, each about 11 minutes in length. These will be split into two seasons of 26, the first broadcasting in the 2027-28 year, and the second in 2028-2029. The pitch document confirms that this will essentially feature the Doctor we know, noting their intelligence, time and space travel in the TARDIS, has two hearts, is from Gallifrey, has a strong moral compass, avoids physical combat, etc. In terms of foes, they may be a little more preschool friendly than we're used to, with the pitch saying, it also wouldn't be Doctor Who without villains and monsters, but these should be more mischievous or bumbling rather than menacing, and provide the Doctor with challenges that can be overcome in a non-threatening way. A list of existing villains and foes for you to choose from will be provided to suppliers who register to pitch. It is far too early for casting news. We may be getting a whole new Doctor specific to this series, or equally, the likes of David Tennant again, or Jodie Whittaker, may be especially well suited. Other than to confirm that Disney and or Bad Wolf haven't locked away the rights to the series for a number of years, unlike perhaps Fox did back in the 1990s, and is holding back the BBC, there is no reason this should affect what will happen to the main series and any other spin-offs.
Oh, this could be quite sweet.
Yeah.
It's just going to be lots of silly monsters or mischievous monsters.
Like Slovene, do we think? Who do we think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, farting and 4-year-olds, yeah. Jeez. I can't wait to see what the animation's like.
11 minutes isn't too bad for a kid's episode that age,
no, if you
is
can
it?
Hold their attention that long, you're doing quite well.
Yeah, 52 11 minutes as well. That's, quite a lot of Doctor Who, actually.
Yeah. It's
quite a chunk.
And I've seen some really catchy Peppa Pig and Bluey episodes recently, so if it's in the same vein.
Oh, or Pingu.
Pingu.
Who doesn't love a Bluey every now and then?
Yeah.
Oh, I think this is ever so sweet and such a good idea.
It is, yeah. It's the one audience has never been catered for.
Not really, no.
Because we had the CBBC kids for Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yeah.
Then we had the adolescent stuff with Class and probably Tortured, frankly, even though it's meant to be adults, that was actually more adolescent.
Yeah.
But nothing for the nippers.
Family stuff with Doctor Who.
Yeah. How do you make a Dalek look bumbling and not threatening in the least?
They did those little toy ones.
The little toy.
Oh, the
Rollerkins.
The Rollerkin Daleks.
No, they were little vinyl things.
Yeah, I know the ones you're talking about. They look like they've been deflated.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be very bumbling this time around, aren't they?
Aww. Assuming they have the rights to the Daleks.
Yeah,
that's the question.
Maybe stairs will be an issue this time round.
And perhaps they've got, like, bubbles in their guns. Yeah. And they're very annoyed because it's bubbles. And
Real Daleks don't climb stairs. They blow up buildings.
Not when they're talking to preschoolers, they don't.
Yeah, could be a lot of fun. And I did inevitably see a few negative comments saying, this is what Doctor Who's become.
Yeah.
I'll just ignore them.
As ever, you'll always get that.
Yeah. I think it's fine. It's good to get kids into the series early.
And it's trying something different. That's the main thing. It's going for a completely
and
different audience.
It in no way affects the main series.
No.
I wouldn't expect it to be considered canon.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if it has a series-specific doctor, if it's one we've never seen before.
Well, this is it. I mean, who would they go for?
See, Jodie would be an obvious choice because of the motherly side of things.
Yeah. And Tennant's done a lot of kids' animation.
Yeah.
Scrooge McDuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he also did that thing with Sophie, didn't he? Sophie Aldred.
Did.
Yeah.
He's done stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I couldn't quite see Eccleston doing it, but you never know.
I don't know. As it's for nippers, he might.
Might, but I expect more likely to be a wholly new doctor, but may not be.
Yeah, we'll see.
But it's going to be a while off before we get guys.
Yeah, still cute.
Ever so sweet.
Star Trek Strange New Worlds get another season. And a death sentence.
Oh,
no.
It was only back in March, about 3 months ago, that we had confirmation that Star Trek : Strange New World will be getting a fourth season. Here we are, we're still waiting for the third season to start airing, and now we have confirmation of also a fifth season is coming.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that fifth season will be the last, and it will also likely be ensmallened from the usual 10 episodes down to 6. For some months, the rumour mill has suggested that a deal with Secret Hideout, who produces the current Star Trek for Paramount, will end with this calendar year. The truncated fifth season is apparently being rushed into production before the end of the year, perhaps giving some credence to that rumour, and maybe also answering why it only has 6 episodes. Maybe. The executive producer put out the following flimflam. Nice word, use of the word flimflam there. We are deeply grateful to Paramount Plus for a chance to complete our 5-season mission, just as we envisioned it, alongside our extraordinary cast and crew, and passionate fans who boldly joined us on this journey. Thank you. With 3 more spectacular seasons ahead for you to see and enjoy, this adventure is far from over.
It's far from over, yeah. As I intended, I could quite see them doing 5 seasons.
Yeah, because 5 seems to be the norm now.
But a truncated 5th season, I don't see that as being on the plan. But
It is interesting because what's happening with Star Trek Academy? Because I believe that is...
That's going to be a 2-season thing.
Yeah, that first season has wrapped...
I think they were doing season 1 and 2 back-to-back.
Yeah, I know they've been commissioned for a second season, but, you know...
I've heard, the sets are huge and expensive.
Yeah.
So they built them, amortised it over 2 seasons, and they filmed them back-to-back, and that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Shame, because I've enjoyed Strange New Worlds awful lot.
Yeah, it's started for a long time.
And also, considering it wasn't initially on the plans, it was the first thing that was bound to fan pressure after Discovery Season 2.
Yeah.
I think 5, though, I think wrapping it up, it won't just suddenly end because nobody wants to do it.
Yeah.
It'll have a proper winding up at the end.
It is good that they're having a proper finish to it. Mm. And also, they only have a limited amount of room with Pike.
Yes. Well, yeah, he's got to go into his wheelchair soon.
Yeah. Oh. And there may be longer episodes.
Yeah.
A final season, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Spaceballs news.
Oh, yeah.
Of all things.
Yeah.
The search for more money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back in 1987, thanks to the power of Schwartz, it was prophesied that Mel Brooks' Star Wars spoof film Spaceballs would get a sequel. The Schwartz works in mysterious ways, but some 38 years later, it has been proven true. Spaceballs 2 is really happening.
Yep. Yep.
Mel Brooks is still alive and is returning as Yogurt.
He's 99, isn't he?
Don't know if he's quite that old.
Google it. Yeah.
Check in.
Plus, also co-writing with Josh Gad and no doubt acting as producer. Lon Starr will be returning in his original form of Bill Pullman, with his son Lewis Pullman taking on the starring role of Starburst, son of Lon and Vespa. Talking of which, Daphne Zuniga will be returning as the one-time Princess Vespa.
Maybe Queen now, who knows?
Yeah. Perhaps the most surprising is the return of Rick Moranis as Dark Helmet.
Oh, wonderful.
Yay! Moranis all but left acting in the 1990s, with this potentially being his first film role since 1997.
Wow.
A few voice-only roles aside.
Wonderful to see him, wasn't it?
I know. Yeah. I really missed him. I really loved him as a child. What did he do? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids Last.
Yes. He was going to come back for that, but it never happened.
Amazon now own MGM, who in turn own the Spaceballs IP. They are committed to a full cinema release of Spaceballs 2 in 2027, the 40th anniversary of the original. That's amazing.
Google has just told me that Mel Brooks will be 99 in a couple of weeks.
Okay,
so the chances of him being around for the 2027 release are slim, but not impossible.
Yeah. I think he's in good health.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm just wondering how he's going to do it, because if I remember rightly, Yogurt, he acted by running around on his knees.
But he can't do that anymore. Yeah, 99. Exactly. That's right.
But now we've got CGI and exactly, AI yeah. and everything.
Perhaps he's got a walker. Yeah. Oh, well, wonderful.
Because
Rick Moranis left to be with his children.
To look after his children.
Did his wife pass away, so he brought up the kids?
That was 30 years ago, though. So.
Yeah.
I think he said in the meantime that he didn't retire as such, but he just got used to not working. Didn't need to.
Even if it's not a full comeback, it would just be nice to see him in this role again see him back in the cinema.
I have seen a teaser trailer with the role.
Yes.
The Star Wars scroll describing everything.
And it looks like they're going to be taking pot shots at the sequel trilogy and all manner of things.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So everything's a target.
Sort of in the vein of Family Guy, Robot Chicken and all of that. Good.
The MCU. Everything's a target.
Hitchhiker's Guide, live show on the way.
Awesome.
Hoopy Froods, somewhere in the vicinity of Riverside Studios, will be able to see a live version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy this November. Mm. It will be based on the novels, and they've also done a deal, or maybe forced to do a deal, with Touchstone Pictures, who gave us the 2005 film. Interestingly, they say the production will take over both Studios 2 and 3 at Riverside, which have seated capacities of 400 and 180, respectively. It is very unclear how that will work. Co-creator, writer and producer Arvind Ethan Davis said, "The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is one of the most influential stories ever told. It's a satire, a comedy, a science fiction epic, a work of philosophy and so much more." Douglas Adams, who I was honoured to have as a mentor, predicted the world we live in now, with its social media gone mad and extinction-level threats. Now, with a group of world-class storytellers drawn from the best of Broadway, the West End and television, we get to bring Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to a new generation of hitchhikers. Early ticket sales for those who sign up for the newsletter go live at midday on Wednesday the 25th of June, a couple of days or so after this podcast goes live. Quite what those tickets will get us is more than a little uncertain right now. Didn't we, were ready to do something like this a while ago and then it didn't happen?
Yeah, it was at the Hawth when it got cancelled.
Yeah, they had a live show doing a tour because we saw the one down in Brighton.
Yes,
we bought tickets and everything.
We did.
And then there was another,
It failed. But yes, that was the original cast from the radio.
Yeah.
With a couple of TV, I think, doing effectively just reading from the scripts on stage. this sounds different.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll have to go from one seated theatre to the next to do another bit of scenery or something because of special effects?
Maybe, but it's only got less than half the seating. Yeah. How would that work?
Well, it's not the first time they've done something like that. I think one of the original stage shows, they had the audience up on a movable seating and it got dragged round the theatre, round the studio.
Oh, various scenes. You've got the 400 in your seats in the originally. Meanwhile, they've taken all the seats out of the 180, so you all have to go in and stand for the next bit before coming back and sitting in your seats again.
Or maybe it's a walk-around interactive, something like the Doctor Experience.
It could be, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's been some talk it might be a bit like Time Fracture, whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah. Doctor thing we did.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
And it mentions Fenchurch.
Oh, okay.
So it's not just the first
collapse screaming into an exam with Jim Rickman's work.
Yeah, that's it.
The live play was actually set before the first book, and it was some amalgamation of all the books with time travel elements installed.
Yes, yeah, very clever, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting. I'll see if we can get tickets.
Yes, definitely.
Any addendums, people?
I have an addendum.
What is your addendum?
I have been scouring hard and far because he nicked all of my addendums.
Oh, Adam.
I know. But as of published today, June the 16th, 2025, at 12:04 p.m.
Getting that in.
Right.
That's when it was published. Yeah. Radio Times have put up that, once again, J. Michael Straczynski is interested in at least writing an episode for, if not potentially taking over as
showrunner.
He's made it known.
Has he?
Straczynski's currently moving to the UK via visa, which means he is an official UK resident, allowing him to
work out at the right time.
Yeah.
Allow him to work on any studio production company or network this side of the pond.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice. Lovely?
Yeah, I mentioned it last podcast before that James is coming over.
Yeah, you've mentioned it was
so
last podcast.
So it wasn't really your addendum at all, though, was it?
Well, no, he has said that he would be interested in showrunning when Chibbers left.
Mm-hmm.
He threw his name into the pot. If not producing, I would love to see him do a story.
Yeah. Maybe we should do a segment on this next time, what we want the future for Doctor Who to be.
Yeah.
How we like to see it go, because that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, quite frankly, with this toddler's show, if there's not a crossover with Pingu or Thomas the Tank Engine, it's just going to be letter writing heaven.
Well, there was the trailer for the last season when they ended up in the Queen Vic.
They did, exactly.
Various other places.
God. Can't be doing that
Queen
for
Vic again.
Yeah. No, Pingu crossover. We demand it.
The BBC do own the Teletubbies, so that not quite the same.
But they're like 6 foot tall.
They are aliens, though.
Scary.
Yeah. And Tinky Winky is a bit dodgy. And that's the end of the news.
And now, the weather!
Okay, so we've just come out of the end of another season of Doctor Who.
Yes, indeed.
So we thought
first.
We would review all things shooty.
Ooh.
Pause for music. I'm at that stage in the cycle of regeneration where I'm really going to miss him.
Yeah.
And I wish he'd stayed longer.
Yeah, it's all too short, wasn't it?
It was.
The tenure. He said at the beginning he would be really annoyed if he didn't get to meet the Daleks. He didn't!
But there's still, you know, you can have a multiple Doctor story with Daleks in. So there's
always CBeebies.
A possibility.
He could meet the melted Daleks.
Yeah, there's various rumours out what should have been.
Yeah.
And one of them was suggesting that Susan was going to turn up at the end and say his Doctor's going to meet the Daleks shortly.
Yeah, I've heard. But we'll see. We'll see.
Shooty was an absolutely fantastic Doctor.
Yes.
He was.
He was just something completely. He was a breath of fresh air, so different to everyone that had come before.
Yeah.
And I have no time whatsoever for people who complain that he was too emotional.
Crying almost every episode, yeah.
He was the Ma Ingalls of Doctor Who, and I loved her as well.
I was thinking of Crying Man, Rembrandt Brown from Sliders.
Yes, yeah.
I remember being sort of put out when I first saw him twirling in a quilt.
In a quilt.
In a quilt. But as soon as he got his actual costume on and whipped out his new Sonic, it felt like him.
He could certainly wear clothes well.
That's it.
Well, that's it. He never actually... This is not a criticism. Most doctors have a look. Mm. The closest I think we've had is John Pertwee. Though, even though we had various frilly shirts and velvet jackets, mm-hmm. it was always
the
a
same
look.
Silhouette, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. yeah.
Automatically was shooty if I think what was his costume. It's that orange top.
Yes.
The check trousers yeah. and the brown
leather
coat.
Yeah. He wore that that's his, a couple of times.
Yeah.
Well, he's wore that a couple of times and also quite a few publicity shots.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any action figures with him wearing anything else, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Mm.
I know Mattel did a Barbie version of it, I think.
The
Ruby.
Character option one.
Yeah.
If
character.
Ever there was an action figure that needed, and you can dress him up with these
exactly.
clothes.
Yeah. This is
it
what
was
I
this
was thinking.
One.
Yeah. yeah.
It'll be in the future how many variations character options decide to bring out.
Well, I'll tell you, he's a cosplayer's dream.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, just... pick one.
Yeah. yeah.
I do remember his first episode being sort of relieved that we were sitting down watching another RTD Christmas episode. like yeah. we had done with all of Tenon yeah. and everything like that. That felt really good.
Because it was Goblins, wasn't it?
It was the Goblins, yeah. yeah. It went for a different audience. It got a song in there straight away, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. There was a different vibe to the yeah. whole thing, which I think is a deliberate attempt to sort of mix it up.
Mm. And it did set up the companion quite well as well. You had a lot of mystery there with...
Around Ruby.
Yeah, around yeah. Ruby's birth yeah. and who her
and
mother
course,
was.
Mrs. Flood.
Mrs. Flood.
And oh, we were all, oh, who is she? Who is she?
yeah.
And of course, we all got it out of the way. Ha ha, what if she's the Rani? Yeah, right.
yeah.
Now, his stories ranged from the sublime to the... Space Babies.
Yes,
yeah.
I didn't like Space
no,
Babies.
I
think I tried to like Space Babies, but when I look back
yeah.
on it, it's a bit cringe.
I wrote it off at the time going, oh, it's Russell doing his thing, you know, that sort of thing. Nice special effects, but I wasn't convinced by the babies talking somehow. And yeah. I felt really ill when I knew that it was a snot monster. And it was just gooing all over Ruby.
I thought the snot monster actually was quite funny.
Yeah.
That was my favourite part of it. And the effects with the monster
yeah.
and not actually seeing it.
Yeah.
yeah.
That
Very
was so
much.
Good.
Yeah.
But it was the babies. It was
yeah.
just, how?
I
Why?
Think it was...
And the fact that it was a first episode of the yeah. season was a really poor choice, in
yeah,
my opinion.
Absolutely.
Personally, I think both the first episode and the second episode were weak.
What was the second episode?
Maestro.
Devil's Chord.
Disagree with you on the second one. I love the second one.
To my mind, they were weak. They should have been buried in the season.
Yeah,
this was the first one for Disney, so this is the first time they're seeing what
the
they're
whole
getting.
New audience.
Yeah.
And we'd already had a god at that point with
yeah.
the toy make, hadn't
yeah.
we? So to have
yeah.
another one straight away.
Yeah,
but I was a little disappointed with the Devil's Chord, how the Beatles were underused. They brought them into this story, and then just right at the end, they did a couple of chords together, and that was it.
Yeah.
I had
yeah.
no trouble with that, because I thought they were awful. yeah, I didn't expect them to look like the Beatles. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There was a lot of comedy at the beginning of the episode where they're all out of tune. They don't know how to sing or write music anymore.
Yeah.
And you see Lulu struggling in the studio
yeah.
as well. But I think I've kind of felt that things were getting better with Boom. Was that the... Stephen
Boom,
Moffat?
Yeah.
So the third one.
That should probably have been the first one up. Because it was more contained, more dramatic.
I don't know, because it's the doctor, you know, the doctor pretty much crippled for half the episode.
It is him crippled for half the episode, but it also showcases how good he is.
Yeah.
He's not even at his full strength, and the mind is ticking away there.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be sure about making that the first one. You need to lead up to how good he can be. But just with something better than Space Babies.
But looking at the rest of them, I'm not sure any of them in the first season are actually good ones to start on.
No.
Then you've got 73 Yards.
No.
Can't start there.
Can't start with that one. Yeah.
Dot and Bubble, again, Dr. Light.
Barely not in it, yeah.
Can't start there. Rogue, maybe, but not really. Then Legends of Ruby Sunday and the two parts of them.
Perhaps
finale.
They should have switched them round and started with Maestro, which was the stronger of the two, even if you didn't like
yes.
it.
Yeah.
There was
then,
a lot of threat with Maestro at times, you know, where everything went silent and the Doctor had blocked out sound with his Sonic.
Yeah.
If there was a few more elements of that,
yeah.
getting captured and put in a a drum, I seem to remember.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
But, and the end of that, they should have explained better why everyone was singing and dancing.
Yes.
That, yeah. You know, I worked out halfway through the dance, oh, yeah, music is back in the world. That's why it's happening.
Yes.
But this was after I'd gone, oh, crying out loud, are we really doing this?
Yeah.
But then, it's back. It's back in a fantastical way, which makes sense.
Totally, yeah.
It should have been explained, yeah.
Yeah.
For one thing, I've always said the first thing to any doctor is like the first season of any serialised sci-fi show or any show, is the writers have got to get used to the character of the doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor, the actor's got to get used to being himself.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say they both got it off from the start. RTD knew that our doctor, and certainly Chuty knew his doctor.
Yeah, but I slightly disagree because, as you've just said, they were all weak to a certain
greater and lesser. I don't put any of that down to the characterization of the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I think it's a case of, I do, because I think it's a case of nearly every single season with a new doctor, I haven't been happy with one way or another. And it gets better the longer that he's in the role.
I disagree with you there.
Axton's first season was his worst.
I think the stories, the first two stories, it could be argued that they didn't give him enough to get into.
There's only been a couple of times, Eccleston, for obvious reasons,
yes,
and Tennant, to my mind, is everything has clicked from episode one.
Also, talking of Tennant, we came off the back of those three specials, which were really good, weren't they? They were all quite strong, and we were enjoying having Donna back.
Yeah,
all three of those episodes were very strong.
But the first season as a whole, I mean, 73 yards was just wow.
Yeah.
Boom, 73 yards, Doss and Bubble, those three for me, right in the middle of the season, were fantastic.
Yeah, Boom absolutely showcased Shooty's abilities. Yeah. And Dot and Bubble, oh my words.
Yeah.
All the way through, you know, we weren't getting it, were we? This middle-aged white couple.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when it clicked, and you're like, you are joking. You're not going to do as he said because of the colour of his skin.
Yeah.
And he was he wasn't even angry with them. No, he was just so frustrated. It's
the fact that he had diminished himself to help them.
Yeah. And he shouldn't have done. They were so far beneath him.
And Dot and Bubble kind of show me that Russell's still got a lot of brand new ideas in there, but doing something
really
different.
Yeah. As I think we said before, the whole Ruby arc completely fell down for me in the fact that it was just the woman who was abandoning her baby pointing at a sign and hoping someone noticed.
It didn't have the payoff.
It was all built up. Yeah,
where did the continuous snow come from?
It wasn't answered.
No.
Yeah. It was built up quite nicely, the snow, at the time, but it felt a bit more Stranger Things, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think that is possibly one of the problems with Russell T., is certainly in the past, every finale has had to be bigger, badder and better than the one before.
Are you saying that in this case he was all build up and no climax?
Well, you get to a certain point, where do you go?
Yeah.
It should have started completely small. Yeah, have the revelation of Ruby, but why don't put the trappings around it?
Yeah.
I did like the setting of 79 at 73 yards. I thought that was quite good, particularly the first half of the episode with them all in the pub winding her up.
And that was wonderful.
Yeah. As I said to review at the time, I loved it at the time because it wasn't anybody else. It was Ruby who'd been taken. The doctor was still there. It was all built off of Ruby's fears. She was in the middle of it, and it was built off of her feelings of fear of abandonment.
And she was still relatively new at that point, so she really didn't know how to survive properly at that point.
And as we said before, the fact that was her the first episode she filmed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, and she's like 19 years old.
That's it. And you see, what's she called? Susan TARDIS by the end of the episode? You see her in every episode.
Susan Triad.
Susan Triad. Sorry. Don't want to give it away.
That was another wonderful one where everyone, all fandoms going, well, come on, Triad is an anagram of TARDIS.
Yeah.
And it's like, did you know Triad is an anagram? Yes, Doctor, we know. We did work that out. But his interaction with Unit, especially Kate.
Yeah.
He's all hugs, isn't he?
He's a very huggy Doctor, which is fine. We like a huggy Doctor.
And Mel.
And Mel, yes. Yes, he's treated Mel so much better than her Doctor did.
Absolutely, yeah. And but, I think that was one of the high points of the unit part for me, was having Mel back and being used, you know, a bit more like her original storyline in the 80s.
The computer specialist.
Yeah. And a moped. Is it a Vespa? She drives an orange Vespa.
It matches the hair, doesn't it?
Yeah. So season two, much better start.
Yes.
We've got Joy to the World first as a Christmas special. In between.
Oh, yes, of course.
And the Zootech finale.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. That's he said. Robot Revolution starts off season two.
Yeah, definitely a stronger start. Not quite as silly. A more serious plot. And good special effects. And I liked the robots. They drew me in straight away because their design.
Yeah. As I said, they reminded me a hell of a lot of the Hulkbusters. Hulkbuster armour from Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And you had your little cleaning robot.
Punish, punish.
Punish, punish.
Punish, punish.
Punish, punish. Not punish, polish.
Definitely punish.
But I'd like to skip back slightly to Joy to the World, because it introduced us the Time Hotel and him being stranded.
With Anita.
Yeah. With Anita. And even though, as you said, he's put a lot of work into himself and he's improved and done meditation, he's still very critical.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's that wonderful, so you realise you don't have any chairs in your top. the person he still really dislikes is himself.
Yeah.
Well, this is Moffat writing again.
Yeah.
He likes his self-loathing doctors.
Yeah. This is slightly more gentler than previous, but yeah.
Well, it does make you think, though, you know, can the doctor talk to his regenerations in his heads? Mm. I mean, why not? He's a Time Lord.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. You've mentioned it quite a few times, where it seems to be his subconscious is moving things into place.
Yeah.
The umbrella from Snowmen.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But it's like, like we've said before, in Big Finish, the 11 was insane.
Yeah.
The Doctor is just one step down from the 11 in that he's got control of himself or himself.
And it fits the character, because the fourth and second Doctors used to mutter themselves working stuff out in their heads as well, didn't they? So.
And, Nicola Coughlan then was Joy.
Oh, yes.
And she was another surprise. You're never sure with these guest stars who are well-known.
Yeah.
But she did really, really well.
She did. Although I think she was overshadowed by Anita.
Yeah, completely unintentionally. Yeah. It was a much better character.
Yeah. Right, in fact, her role was expanded, wasn't it, Anita's role?
So it was meant to just be, receptionist welcoming him.
Yeah.
But they clicked so well that, what the heck, let's add some more.
We've got Robot Revolution, which is, again, as you said, very high standard. Not sure about polishing up the mess afterwards.
This is educational, though.
Yeah.
Because you've got kids of, like, say, Ben's age watching, and the doctor going, he's an egg and a sperm. Questions. Let's lead into the birds and bees.
Yeah. So what do we have after that?
Lux.
Lux, yeah, Lux. Which is really good.
Again,
really
that was good. That was a very good one.
Mm. Much better than Devil's Court, which is a similar
idea. Yeah. I love everything about Lux. There was nothing I didn't like. Yeah. I enjoyed seeing the fans breaking the fourth wall. And just love the setting, the way it was filmed, exploring sort of the other humans' reactions to the Doctor and Belinda as well. I thought it was all quite well done. And you even, like, tugged at the heartstrings with the guy playing the films in the hotel.
Yeah. Mm. With his wife.
And you really had some menace with that character of Lux.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I don't know if you were here when we reviewed it the first time round, when we were talking about the fans and how there was an initial oh God, but then you had listened to them talk and they were talking about how the Doctor helped them find
the best of them,
their best friends, their loves, everything.
Absolutely, it's so true.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought initially it was going to be a bit played for laughs or a bit cheesy, but right at the end when they suddenly realised they were real, that was really good. And they interrupted the end titles, didn't they? The credits at the end, just to show that they were still there watching, going, "Oh my God." But yeah, and the way that they all loved that one episode, Blink, and it wasn't even one of Russell's episodes.
Yes, and it's one that the Doctor really isn't in. Anyone.
Yeah, Doctor Light episodes. Yeah. It's just brilliant.
Then what did we have?
The Well.
Oh, Midnight, the sequel to Midnight.
Yeah, that's quite a... I didn't like Midnight, but I've done three... I acknowledge Midnight is fantastic.
Yes.
But for reasons. But this one is... again, sublime. It builds on that. And this one, to my mind, is a far better story.
Yeah, and it sets up quite well with things like half the people have got broken necks and just broken into bits.
And sort of, again, strange... of aliens when they went aboard the colony.
Yeah, or Revenge of the Cybermen, where they just arrive on the Nerva Beacon and everyone's just dead in the corridor. They can't find anyone.
Bad dummies.
Yeah.
This whole season has been an example of how good something is when you don't have spoilers.
Yeah,
because nobody saw Midnight coming.
No. But as soon as he said it used to be a diamond planet,
it all
kicked in. We got there just before the Doctor.
You can feel the hairs on the back of your neck.
Like, amazing. No way.
I love it when you put it together a couple of seconds before
they tell you.
They tell you on the screen.
And the deaf character they were all signing to, for me, if I was in that room and I was deaf, that would ramp up the fear because, you know, you wouldn't be able to tell what was going on for the most part.
Yeah.
Don't turn your back on me.
Yeah. Mm. And it's played quite well at the end that you're not sure if it went down the well or if it got out. There's just hints without you seeing anything.
I think it got out or there was more than one of it.
Maybe.
There is rumours that the last part of the trilogy was that second Tennant episode, Wild Blue Yonder, because it's a similar sort of creature that you don't know much about. So if you watch them in that order, that apparently works quite well. Okay. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Then what do we have?
A Lucky Day.
Dr. Light, was that?
Dr. Light, it's Conrad turning up. And
Unit Heavy.
Conrad. Again. Oh, I would still punch you if you walked into the room. You were very good.
Yeah.
Every episode here was damn good. If I had to say it was a point one, then Lucky Day would be that one for me. Mm-hmm. Not because it's bad. It's the rest of them are so good.
Yeah.
Mm. I did like that the rubber costumes turning out to be rubber costumes.
Yes. We did the making of the Unleashed.
Yeah.
And to make the rubber costumes, they actually went back to old school
Silurians and things.
Yeah.
I really liked Kate Stewart in that. I totally agree with her on every level in that episode.
Yeah.
I would have, because the live feed on the cameras, so I would have let it get Conrad.
Yeah.
Well,
the closest thing I can put it to is Buzz Aldrin punching the...
Going out and called him a coward.
It was perfectly fine and perfectly happy until he called him a coward. And you could see the shutters come down and...
Whereas Kate was like, don't insult my dad.
Yeah. That was the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good because while he was having a go at the Brigadier, I was bristling. And I think many other people would have been bristling as well. Mm-hmm. You don't have a go at the Brig.
No.
We haven't really mentioned Belinda up to this point, have we?
We haven't.
Perhaps this episode shows a bit of a problem in that she's not in many episodes.
They yazzed her.
She wasn't in this one at all, apart from the very beginning of the cold open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in the finale, certainly the last part, she doesn't
do very
much.
The last part, they did yazz her, yes.
So they bring back Ruby here.
To do what Belinda
overall,
should
she
be
gets
doing.
A lot more to do over the two seasons than Belinda does.
In that one episode.
Whereas personally, I think that Belinda's a more real feeling character.
I've got no problem with either of them. I don't.
It's not that I don't like Ruby. It just she feels a bit heightened, maybe. Whereas Belinda feels very grounded, very down to earth, a real person you might meet.
Yeah, Belinda's more engaged, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's not scared to hold her ground and question
things. It's the whole being a nurse, isn't it?
Yeah. The Belinda character had admittedly only one emphasis on this, and that was to get back to earth.
Yeah.
But she did call him on a lot of things.
She
stood her ground on a hell of a lot of things.
Ruby's what, about 5 years younger?
Yeah.
At least five years younger.
10.
To be a fully qualified nurse like that, she's got to be knocking on 30, hasn't she, Belinda?
So
Ruby's a decade younger, so she's just a kid.
Yeah.
Whereas Belinda has put up with hospital life for God knows how many years.
Yeah, argumentative patients, arrogant doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 33, Varada, and
Millie's
is
21, 22?
20, yeah. So
20, God.
13 years freedom.
They couldn't have got Belinda into it, could they? The whole thing was they couldn't get back to 2025
exactly,
at all.
They got back and she hooked up with Conrad, you know. Problem solved.
Well, it's a shame it couldn't have been like a flashback episode of an episode we hadn't seen that could explore her better. That's a Russell T thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's face it.
But no, I with all the guys from UNIT as well, I just... with Old Who, a lot of the time, if there was not a lot for someone to do, you shoved them down a tunnel or locked them up.
Ducting.
Well, yeah, Tegan and Turlough crawling around in the ducting, yeah. But with this, there were so many different characters.
I agree.
And even if they didn't have many lines, they were always there and they were always doing something. They seemed to deal with them better.
Yeah.
Even Rose, who, you know, who Conrad couldn't possibly imagine, after she reappeared, she must have had one or two lines.
Yeah, maybe.
But you knew she was there.
The only thing I noticed with Unit this time round is, like, you meet Unit one time and they ask you to join and then you're brilliant at everything and there's no real development with it.
The training at Unit is amazing.
So everyone feels like they're automatically on the same level, whereas...
Oh, no, you missed it. They put you in the timey-wimey room.
All right.
You're in there. It's like the zero room, so you don't age, but you're doing like 15 years worth of training in there. And then you come out exactly the same, but much smarter.
You've got the archive of the missing episodes, haven't you?
Next up, we've got the story in the engine.
A very different episode.
Ah, the Rani.
This is the barber shop.
The barber. And a mysterious appearance of Poppy and the fugitive doctor.
Captain Poppy.
It's a real shame we didn't get more fugitive in the
finale.
More
fugitive, more Susan.
Yes. I'm really glad that these two seasons that Russell could have completely ignored Anthony Chibnall did.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He's gone out of his way
to confirm
that stuff is still canon.
Yeah.
As I said, discussed at the time, it was the woman remembering the fugitive doctor. So it may not have been her, or may not have been Shooty's doctor who came and helped.
Yes.
So
it could have been Dr. Joe.
Yeah.
But this one was a cracking bit of storytelling in so many levels.
Again, it's completely left field. And sort of, to my mind, it's travelling the human psyche rather than travelling in space.
Even with the Doctor, it was nice to see him go to his safe place and have that rug sort of whipped out from underneath him.
Can't even trust your friends.
No.
I knew that about Adam, but Scott, that was a disappointment, man.
I got most of it the first time round, but I did have to watch it twice to get all of the nuances in there.
I watched it again after Unleashed, mainly because I wanted to try and see the writer, because he was one of the market trainers.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And I realised there was a couple of things I had missed, so watched it again. And it's just thoroughly, thoroughly good. The spider, ooh.
That was the bit that threw me, I think, on the first watch. I was fine with everything else, storytelling, the engine, but then they're on the back of a spider. So I had to sort of rewatch it for that. I think I've got it now.
And the production quality of these two series has been amazing.
Yeah.
You would never doubt that was actually filmed in Lagos.
Lagos.
It was
a car park.
Even down to the colour palette. It was all brilliant.
In Wales.
A car park in Wales. In the winter.
And we've been there.
Yeah.
Well, it was the same from the Unleashed, the massive lights that they had up on rigs.
To make it all look sunny and bright.
Same with Lux.
You see
the behind the scenes of them filming.
It was a storm.
Thick overcoats, hot water bottles.
The American flag wobbling back and forth.
It was an incredible job they did.
Yeah.
And of course you have Mrs. Flood popping up in every episode this time as different
people. We were wondering who she was.
Yeah.
In different time periods as well.
Yes, yeah, so she
did. Which we didn't get in the first series.
Yeah. No. I still don't completely understand why she broke the fourth wall.
Nope. Not been explained.
She just did. Yeah. But then so did the fans.
It was a weird two seasons because you had the gods back. They were breaking the fourth wall a lot in different episodes. Mm-hmm. And they're playing with reality and perception. Yep. So I suppose it kind of fit, even though they didn't explain why. But in the reality war, obviously, reality just completely broke anyway. So
yeah. And then, of course, you had that baby with the toy maker laugh.
Oh, yeah. It was nice to see Conrad frightened of a baby.
Of course, that leaves us with the last...
The Intergalactic Song Contest.
Yes.
Which we all must admit that we were all terrified before this one.
Yeah, it could have gone either way,
it could have leapt over a dozen sharks.
Yeah.
Instead, Luke it was magnificent.
It was.
Rylan, before this, was just... Oh, it's him off that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Jesus, mate, could your teeth be any shinier? Now Rylan is the man.
Is he?
It was cheesy and camp at the same time as putting, like, the fear into you as well with people, the whole crowd getting sucked out into space. And in that moment, you sort of, everything's silent and you think, oh, They've really killed them all.
That was the thing, the fact that it was completely silent.
I recommend watching the Gallifrey girls react to this one, because they hit all the right beats and they react completely the right way. Certainly when everyone's getting sucked out of the stadium.
Mm-hmm. They weren't happy.
They were not happy at all.
What were their thoughts on the glitter gun?
Oh, they loved the glitter gun.
You get Susan Foreman
yes.
out of nowhere, which I didn't know that was
happening. Then that was a coffee spitting moment.
That was. Mm. I assumed all that Susan stuff was about Susan Triad from the previous series. So, as you were saying, you got no spoilers. You just don't know these things are coming.
Because this was a double coffee spitter, wasn't it? We had Susan, and then we had the mid-credits scene that lots of people didn't know was there.
Yeah. And you had the torturous doctor.
Excuse me, I just need to go.
Yeah, and the doctor basically turning into the Emperor from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
As we said, this is why he needs someone to stop him.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't just, I'm getting my revenge. That was torture, and it carried on as long as it took.
As part of your conversation when we reviewed it, yes, it was similar to the Family of Blood, but this is the setup and you walk away from it while he was there, hands-on, continuously.
And Shooty, all the way through both series, you know his smile. His smile is wonderful. His smile is amazing.
You know his sad face.
And you know when he's upset. But that was the first time we'd seen Fury.
Yeah, it very much reminded me of Matt Smith. The cold.
Yeah, I'm angry now.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to
happen.
The
cold, naked, blue Fury. Yeah. Not the incandescent that Tennant does so well.
Yes.
This was cold.
Yeah.
And then the finale, which we spoke about last time, so we probably shouldn't go into it too much.
We did, but the cinematic finale experience.
We did.
Yeah.
And it was good.
So, overall, I think it feels a real shame we've had so few episodes. So it's been 8 times 2 plus 2 specials.
So it's 18.
So 18
episodes
with Gatera as the main doctor, anyway.
So far, this is Doctor Who, nothing is out of bounds.
Doesn't feel enough, particularly given three of those were Dr. Light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we said, it would have been so good to have him just for one more series.
Yeah. Yes.
And if he wanted to stay for another after that, that would have been good too.
You'd have everything in there, wouldn't you? Dalek, Cybermen, Yeti, they'd have given fish him the works. People, the Candyman.
Yeah. What could have been, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that boy's star is on the rise.
That's the trouble. The whole thing is on hiatus now for the foreseeable future.
Well, certainly it's uncertain. We don't know quite what's
taking place. CBeebies.
Yeah, exactly.
CBeebies.
But Gatera himself, I feel like he's probably made Doctor his own in a way which nobody has since maybe Eccleston.
Yeah.
Mm. Eccleston didn't go in there looking at past Doctors.
No.
He didn't base it on childhood memories of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But I feel the same with Gatera.
Yeah.
With other Doctors, obviously, Tennant,
Smith.
You could see he loved Tom Baker and Davison, what have you. Matt Smith loved Troughton watching it.
Yeah.
You could see the history there, but here
it's an original.
Did his own thing.
Yeah.
I think it really worked.
Yeah.
And it's his manner of speech as well, calling people hun.
Yeah.
That is
one of my favourite lines from the world. You're not allowed to call me babe. Okay, hun.
Sorry, hun. Oh, dear. Yeah, it would have been so nice. But apart from Space Babies, which is definitely not as bad as Love and Monsters, I don't think he really had a bad episode. I'd happily watch any of them again.
I think finales had weak parts.
Yes, particularly the first finale.
Yeah. And that sudden rewrite at the end of the recent finale. You could tell where it all sort of wrapped up and then they'd rewritten after that. But again, that's not really his fault.
And what about the favourite song then? So what songs have we had? Obviously we had the
Goblin song.
That was a good song.
We had I've Got a Dog.
Twist at the
a
end.
A Dog Called Fred.
Yeah, that one's interesting.
And Doug-a-Doo.
Yay. Well, I think the fact that Spotify, when you ask Spotify to play songs by Murray Gold, the first one it plays is Doug-a-Doo. We have an unlikely winner. But I think if I had to choose a favourite, it would be the Goblin song.
The Goblin song is just less annoying, isn't it?
Doug-a-Doo is hilarious when you're teaching your grandchildren to sing it in the car.
Yeah.
While their dad goes 9 shades of red and threatens to put you in a home. But when Adam puts it on a 12-hour loop and makes us sit here and listen to it, you feel your eyeballs melting.
Yeah. the goblins had some threat, didn't they? Because they were singing about cooking a child.
And killing a baby. Yeah. And as Ruby pointed out, they're seasoning her. At least they took their cooking seriously.
Dagadoo is a very serious song. It's about love and triumph and war.
I could harm you with a spoon.
It's just we don't understand what she's saying.
If no one is cosplaying that thing for the next convention we go to, I'll be very disappointed. Go and get yourself a Bernie Clifton emu and adapt it.
Yeah. We should also shout out 15, the theme that Murray Gold did for the 15th Doctor.
Oh, yes.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's another good one. Yeah.
It was a relief to have Murray Gold back, wasn't it, after the Whittaker era?
Well, I don't know. So I'm going to mangle his name. Sego Akinola did produce a couple of good tracks. Yeah. They were there.
It's, different approach.
It was a different approach, and they weren't as stand out.
Yeah.
Which I think one of the problems with the Murray Gold is you should be watching the telly rather than listening to the music. But the music is good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. It's worth an album.
Sega Akinola, it was like a step back to the original series.
It was.
Where the music didn't interfere with what you were watching, but you would notice if it wasn't there. But Murray Gold is just amazing. And Murray Gold makes for a better CD.
Yes.
Definitely. And concert.
Yeah.
And that was another thing that came back with RTD, wasn't it?
They had the album. They
had one for the 60th, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I had it. It came out before Christmas, didn't it? Because I had it on nice and loud whilst wrapping presents.
The prom, it would have been before September.
It would, yes. Yeah, I probably watched it on repeat.
The 9th of September.
Yeah.
One serious question to end on, I think. It's 15th Doctor. If he were a fruit, what fruit would he be?
Something spicy.
Spiky, like a dragon fruit. Not quite a spicy.
Prickly pear.
I think not loved by everybody.
A lemon.
A lemon. Not a lemon.
But I think a lot of people did really enjoy his take on it. So it's got to be something which not everybody likes, but people
prickly
do really
pear.
Love it.
He's sweet a banana. And soft. But then when you rouse him, you really don't want to be messing with him.
I'd say a tangy banana. Kiwi.
You'd say a banana. You hate bananas. What are you saying about shooting?
No, you said not everyone likes.
Right.
The doctor would love a banana, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
Bananas are good. Okay, please write to us and tell us what you thought of Shooty as the Doctor, Shooty's entire era. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net. End on a serious question.
Yeah.
If the Doctor was a fruit. Okay, chaps, we have a bit of feedback.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
From Matt in Torquay.
Hello, Matt. The Glen Eagles Hotel, no doubt.
I'm sorry, I forgot you.
You're
being quiet. How am I meant to remember you're there if you're quiet? Oh, Lord, now he's in a grump. 1, 2, 3.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
Hello, grumpy Handles. Hello, Inky McSpurt, squirts a lot. And Dinky McSquirts a lot.
Dangerzilla the Mighty and Terence.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock, Graham.
And is that a fluffy cat?
That is
goats.
Evil cat.
Goats. So many goats.
That's his Blofeld cat.
Oh, it is. And I've forgotten your name, chap.
The Stormtrooper.
Sandy.
Anyway, back to Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Matt says, hello again, staggerers. I trust you are all well.
Hello, Matt.
So Shooty's second series has come and gone, and so, it would seem, has he.
Yeah.
I thought I'd better share my thoughts on the second half of this series with you, while still fresh in my mind, so here goes. The story and the engine. On first watch, I just didn't get it. I could appreciate it, but just didn't get it. On second watch, though, the story elements all clicked into place, and I adored it. I loved the cosmic barbershop setting, and the further insight into the pantheon of the gods. Very clever, indeed. The Interstellar Song Contest. This was the one I had been dreading.
Like us.
I'm not a fan of Eurovision. I know I'm a rubbish gayer. So the thought of rubbish songs and all of that cheese being thrown at the screen made me quite nervous as to what RTD would do with it all. However, I loved it. The stakes were surprisingly high and the episode quite thrilling. The glitter cannon and camp joke made me holler. It was also very interesting to explore this Doctor's darker side.
Yeah.
Plus, of course, the bi-generation of the Rani was a nice surprise indeed. All things looked to be lining up nicely for the two-part finale. Wishworld. Ah, now, this one just wasn't for me.
Oh.
On first watch, it settled firmly at the bottom of all Shooty's run. Mm. I just didn't enjoy the concept. It all seemed so laboured. It honestly struggled to keep my attention, which was a strange first for me in Doctor Who. For me, this was just a long trailer to a finale and boring to boot. But surely the final episode would be a mind-blowing spectacular, the reality war. And here we are, the finale. At the cinema, no less.
Yeah.
On rewatch, Wishworld was a little better, probably fueled by the grand scale of the screen and sound in View's large screen one at their Torbay site. The cliffhanger was nicely resolved with a nod back to the Time Hotel. Anita's character was a joy to watch and have return. Her finding out that this doctor might be more interested in men was a lovely scene. The action in the first half of this episode played out very nicely, although the cast list should include one Basil Exposition. Omega was fine and exactly what I thought the character would amount to. Really? Shame the new Rani got eaten, but it was worth it for the two Ranis joke, which I thought was genius. Things were all tied up, but I knew there must have been at least another 30 minutes to go. The last 30 minutes were a bit of a roller coaster for me of highs and lows, the lows being mainly what I suspect had been cut to include a hasty regeneration. I wasn't a fan of the whole Poppy arc, but I thought the jacket folding scene was really well done. Jodie's surprise appearance was a joy and completely caught me off guard. When the inevitable regeneration came, I felt strangely unemotional, which was a first for me as I'm normally really emotionally invested in a regeneration story. The sight of Rose gurning out from the regeneration energy made me sigh with disappointment. I left the cinema feeling mildly disappointed. I felt quite shortchanged by the whole thing, but probably not as shortchanged as Carol Ann Ford. Yeah. I heard that she originally featured in a nice coda during scenes originally filmed, something about her smiling from afar at the Doctor and Belinda in a nightclub at the end of the episode. I hope this isn't true, but I have a feeling it might have been as a promotional image of the Doctor and Belinda in a nightclub was released just before the last episode. Mm-hmm. I really hope that Carol Ann Ford didn't end up shortchanged by the seemingly rushed departure of the show's star. Regarding the regeneration, I'm sure the Rose thing will be explained away in seconds and that she's just a placeholder. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced this is connected to the regeneration energy that the Doctor poured into the TARDIS and Bad Wolf. We will see. To sum up then, the last two episodes did leave me with a bitter taste in my mouth. I could never be anything like the online haters. Hate should be reserved for important things like famine, war and the current raft of dictators manoeuvring themselves into power in the Western world. Mm. And melon.
Oh, yes.
I really do hate melon. What's the point in something that tastes like water?
Cucumbers as well.
However, I do think that the time is right for a rest for Doctor Who. I'm hoping that Disney lose interest, which I'm sure they will due to the political climate in the US. I'd quite like to see RTD2's writing without Disney's influence, but maybe it's time for him to step away as well. Get someone new as a showrunner. Not Moffat or Chibnall version 2. Someone brand new with new ideas for a brand new yet old show.
Yeah.
All the best and keep staggering, Matt in Torquay. Thank you, Matt.
J. Michael Straczynski?
Yeah, JMS. Yeah. Maybe more than that next time, but yeah.
Matt ended on a fruit as well.
A melon. Do we have any audio feedback?
We do have a bit of audio feedback. We've got one here from the Dragon Maker.
Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Staggerers. Hello, Terrence. Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty. Hello, Head of Pertwee. Just a very quick feedback today, as I have just finished listening to you guys. It's been a time. Mm-hmm. And I am sitting here with an ill cat.
Oh, dear.
And just really one thing on my mind. Duck-a-doo, duck-a-doo. See ya.
Thank you.
Very quick one.
Thank you, Catherine.
Hope the cat gets better.
Excellent feedback.
I love that sort of feedback.
Yes.
And so that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Thank God.
But fear not, next time there'll be more of the same.
No more
fun, frivolity and jollity.
Please save me.
News and reviews, more who old and new. So until that, D for Dugadoo? Decidedly dodgy and disastrous designed dog.
Dysentery.
Where does dysentery come into it?
From the dog.
Oh, fine.
Comes dangling dangerously.
Dangerously. Towards us. This is me, Fake Keith, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The whole of life is just like watching a film. Only it's as though you've always got in 10 minutes after the big picture has started. And no one will tell you the plot. So you have to work out all by yourself from the clues.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 474, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Scott Fuller, and the real Keith Dunn. Views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Woo! Woo! Hello, good evening, and wibble bum.
Dabba do, dabba do, dabba 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 do, dabba do, dabba do.
And I, yes, I am.
I'm going to burp. I'm so sorry. No, I'm not going to
burp. I was going to say
burp.
Released, but.
I did burp.
No, I've had the holes in my trousers repaired.
Do I, yes, I am again. I'm sorry, I really was going to burp.
Without further ado.
Oh, yeah.
Dagadoo.
Without further ado.
I did hold my breath. Could you hear the birds?
Yeah. That's going to pick up on the mic. Never mind.
Well, halfway through, you're going to have to stop and say, can anyone hear birds?
Yeah.
And it's likely to be, what's that? M. Schmoll ended?
M. Smallland.
Oh, thank you.
Like Biggins, but... Okay.
I thought it was an ensign joke at one point.
M. Smallland. Or have you read one?
I've read one.
I shall read.
I shall read.
Ooh, oh, God, it's Mel Brooks. Picture of him doing jazz hands.